Welcome to the Trade Show Podcast, the home for conversations with global leaders in the trade show and events business. Our show will bring you face to face with experts who speak about the possibilities and trajectories of this $50 billion industry. I'm your host, Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make conversion easy. Welcome to this episode of the Trade Show Podcast. Thank you for listening and your continued feedback. If you have suggestions or you want me to dig in with a specific guest, please write to me at shubhanjan@pitch.link or message me on LinkedIn. Both links available in the show notes. My guest today is Sujoy Cherian, founder and CEO of Option One Group based in Dubai. Sujoy has spent over 22 years pioneering innovation at the intersection of immersive experiences, content creation, and next generation technologies.
Today's events are going to be driven by the next degree of integration, which is hyper-personalization. And hyper-personalization means I'm seeing what I need to see and what I need to know at a large scale, where every person within the venue gets a personalized touch to gain more knowledge retention. And that's always the end goal. And that's what people need to understand. All the money spent on a large production without a personalized agenda for your consumer to take back knowledge that you're conveying and not achieving the desired knowledge retention is going to be money badly spent.
Sujoy is a globally recognized creative technologist and CEO of the Option One Group, leading innovations across immersive tech, AI activations, and digital storytelling. He's ranked among the most influential people in events and event technology. His footprint spans the UAE, KSA, Bahrain, France, India, and the Philippines. Sujoy is a sought-after speaker at global forums from Las Vegas to Riyadh, defining the future of experiential tech. Known for his ability to demystify complex innovations and predict trends, his talks inspire industry veterans and next-gen entrepreneurs alike. Now, on to this insightful episode with Sujoy Cherian. Sujoy, welcome to the Trade Show Podcast. I'm glad that you could finally make time and we are on this conversation.
Yeah, pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Of course. So even before we go into very specifics, a lot of your work is around experiences and immersive experiences for attendees. So tell us a bit about the work you are doing so that we get a sense of where you are and what's your vantage point from where you are looking at the industry.
I think the way things are evolving in today's day and time, you have to be so relevant to the latest in tech, as now the industry is so driven by the need for mixed media technology with the integration of AI and all of that, which is the new trend, and which seems like a trend that's going to stay for some time. It makes people in the industry feel almost obsolete if they're not catching up to what's happening in the current season. Unlike before, where your work and your technology knowledge based on experience really contributed to what's going on today. I think that's radically changing. And those who have been living in that analog world of entertainment technology now feel disconnected if they have not caught on to the new trends. And this is the big shift that is happening in our industry. And that's the part that I luckily enjoy doing, which is constantly investing a fair amount of my hours in research and development in the space of entertainment technologies integration within the genre of clientele that we deal with. So I think that's a big move for most industries that are linked to the entertainment world to in some way or the other evolve in their learning curve to quickly adapt to what's happening right now with a new generation of technology.
Right. So it would be nice to unpack this a bit more, because a lot of people who are not possibly experiencing this in the trade shows and events they're participating in or attending, they would potentially feel that there is a gap of what we are talking about here and what they know.
Yeah.
So would you unpack it? I mean, either by taking example of a customer for whom you have built experiences or events where you have directed the experiences. Can you share some details with us?
So I think it goes back down to the fundamentals of the data that has been processed over the last few decades with what's the objective of events and how content is consumed.
Mm.
The average consumer has evolved, obviously, with the attention span based on digital distractions. So current data shows that in today's time, the average consumer sitting at an event is obviously constantly being distracted by either their mobile phones or their smartwatches or, you know, different things buzzing around you and giving you these pop-up notifications. And over the last few decades, this has seen a major decline on content consumption, because back in the day we would watch content and then people would sit, and because that was the entertainment, that was the main focus, and now that has completely changed because you're constantly having these digital distractions. And we've gone down to as low as 15 to 20 minutes is your window to get your key message across at a big conference or an event before you start to lose 50% of the audience.
Right.
So that's a very bad number, you know, for imagine all the money that's spent in these trade shows and massive events where huge productions are put together. If the content is not immersing the audience, you've lost them in the first 20 minutes. So having said that, the evolution of mixed media and immersive technology has taken that front seat on the checklist for large productions. So it's not anymore an option. Should we make it interactive or should we add the element of personalization? No, it is a necessity today. And today's events are going to be driven by the next degree of integration, which is hyper-personalization. And hyper-personalization means I'm seeing what I need to see and what I need to know at a large scale, where every person within the venue gets a personalized touch to gain more knowledge retention. And that's always the end goal. And that's what people need to understand. All the money spent on a large production without a personalized agenda for your consumer to take back knowledge that you're conveying and not achieving the desired knowledge retention is going to be money badly spent. So to break it down, I think that's where the trend is driving towards. It's the need for high level engagement.
Right. So tell me, I mean, there's a lot of talk about AI. You also mentioned AI being a necessary component of this whole development that's happening. Obviously, when you talk of hyper-personalization, it sort of seems that we are talking of AI being leveraged to a great extent.
Yes.
What's really going on there?
Today's average consumer always thinks of AI as the ChatGPT. Because obviously that's at consumer level and that's what everybody knows. Okay, AI is a chatbot that can answer all the questions. It's my go-to digital friend. But there's a lot more beyond that. That's one model. That's one language that is helping the average consumer. In terms of integration within events, there's so much that's happening on the back end on live data processing. Right from RSVP to automated reminders to the need for tracking geo position of your attendees within a venue, making sure that a level of sentiment analysis is in play at the back end, where in the past you would require to have people go very up close to to a camera to be scanned and then have a sentiment analysis. Today, average 4K cameras, which are used like on a video call today, could be set up within venues and then just be randomly not invading people's privacy, but just tracking people's attention span at different areas to create heat maps, to tell the organizer in real time on a dashboard that this is going to be a busy zone now because it's driving a lot of footfall because of this happening. You could then take strategic decisions to send push notifications through the event application to move people to other important areas within the venue that has something new coming up. In the past, this data would be analyzed post the event to say, okay, what succeeded, what failed, what area, what can we do better next time? Today, AI can be used in real time to take spontaneous decisions within minutes, within seconds, based on heat maps, based on sentiment analysis, based on footfall, to drive a fair spread based on informed decisions that you can take in real time, and then make sure that the investment across different zones within an event have an ROI, especially when you have sponsors who are expecting to see people, but then everybody is going because you have a celebrity at the other corner or a VIP speaker or a sheikh visiting, and everybody flocks where the crowd is going because that's the human tendency. Everybody's going there. Let us go there, right? That's the human tendency. Just go where everyone's going. So this kind of data analysis is now being rapidly adopted into several workflows within the trade show environment specifically, as well as live concerts for crowd control, to avoid stampedes, to avoid bottlenecks, to create an easy flow and in and out into stadiums. Again, using sentiment analysis, cameras track people's reaction and very easily deploy security to areas that may already have a red alert before the action happens. So it's like preventive measures. Preventive actions are now being powered by AI. And I think that's going to make a drastic change in the way we do crowd control now for big sporting events, cricket matches, football matches, or live concerts, where we always have that fear of how we're going to manage a crisis. Should there be a stampede? Should there be a riot? Should there be a fight at the venue? Sentiment analysis will start analyzing that and sending security alerts to chief of security or chief of staff or a command control center that allows you to take decisions. And besides that, there's so much more on the back end that can completely transform the way you manage audience feedback, the polling, etc. Rather than now, when somebody leaves an event and gets back home, and then 4 days later, we send him usually a survey, and then the survey is like 10 pages. Most of the time, you've lost your audience because one, either they're not interested in clicking the link, then it's already too far after the event. Two, they see it and they see like, okay, it's going to take me 5 minutes. I don't have the time for this. Or they're driving and they saw the link and it's like, no, I'll do this later, and then it's shelved. But now imagine if through AI and through geo-positioning, each time I step out of a zone, I get a pop-up and says, rate me on a 5-star basis. How good was your experience in that session or in that catering or, whatever it could be, right? Every time I step out of a geo fence, I get a pop-up saying rate it. And I do those ratings 5 times and it took me only 5 seconds each. Now I've got real-time data on a daily basis by the hour, seeing the rating. And I can take decision right away, go to my vendor or go to the speaker manager or go to the content curator and say, you know what, you're not getting audience. I'm already seeing in the first half of our 3-day event, a big decline on audience rating. Let's do something to turn this around. So you could take these spontaneous decisions that would change the game and ensure ROI is driven before the end of the event, rather than saying, what can we fix the next year around?
Right. That's a lot of change and a lot of data and a lot of possibilities with the data as you rightly said, I mean, getting real time inputs and thereby the ability to take fast decisions to turn things around to make things better obviously sounds like a game changer. This is not something we were capable of a few years back.
Absolutely.
Sort of break it down to the next level, that if we move from the organizer to the exhibitor, what is happening at an individual exhibitor level? What can they do? How can they leverage the technologies that are around today?
I think there's such amazing potential right now with technology that's available for exhibitors. And I keep telling this now to many of our clients and agencies who come and say, okay, we've got this brand or this exhibitor who's building this massive stand and they're looking for some cool tech. And I keep telling them, don't just look for cool tech. Don't just look for toys. Look for ways to capture your audience attention, capture data from your visitors, capture information in a very non-invasive way, because you have such a lot of footfall on the stand. You want to filter from that who is really a potential buyer, right? That's why I'm exhibiting. I'm putting in hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands. But either way, each one's investment is intended with a targeted ROI. And the old school method was have some eye candy on the stand. People come, collect some business cards, make some notes. If your salespeople were efficient enough, that notes would probably get deciphered in a few days or a week once they come back after their, you know, rest days post the exhibition. By then you've already lost a week or 10 days, and then process that data. Another few days goes in that. And then you send out emails to all these random data that you've collected. And you're hoping that someone or a good percentage of these will respond back with a query. Mm-hmm. And you would then convert. Now, all of this happens in a matter of seconds with technology. Because, of course, based on input and integration with the organizers, if NFCs or RFID or even applications are driven through the onboarding process of the visitors, the exhibitor then gets to tap on this information. And we're already seeing this, right? You start to scan a badge or you scan to collect information. It's the digital process is happening. That's just a digital transition. How do you use this data to capitalize on conversion in real time? And that's where hyper-personalization comes into play. It's making sure that if I'm seeing you coming onto the stand, I should know that your preferred language is French. Your area of expertise is in software or in robotics, or I don't know, whatever it may be, my product. I may have a vast lineup of services and products, but I want to first tickle your senses and talk to you about what is your interest. Now, that is possible with proximity sensors. When you approach, my device should already tell me, okay, this person's preferences is this. This is the area of interest, etc. And I jump to that topic. I could have ways of identifying who's a VVIP buyer and who's a decision maker compared to who's just there shopping. All this information could be based on data that's already there in a registration form when a visitor is logging into an exhibition web portal and registering to attend the event. This data can be processed in real time for exhibitors to take informed decisions and action at the same time. We've had a project where we allowed the reception desk to have a display that each time a person came and approached, the NFC cards within the badges notified them of the person's name. So I would greet you by your name as you approach the desk, and they would be shocked, like, do I know you? Like, how do I know you? And say, yes, we've been expecting you. And then I take you directly to a senior officer who's specialized in your area of interest, because my display has already shown me that, okay, you're an AI expert, you're a CEO, or you're a head of procurement, or whatever your title is. So we could predefine who's going to handle what kind of clientele when they come on stand. And if it's a general visitor, we have a hostess who just takes them around on a tour. And all this was done only by NFC, proximity sensors, and data that was collected from the registration information. But the hyper-personalization element drove such a lot of interest because the person was directly discussing his interest with an expert rather than a host, and then meeting the next person, and then eventually meeting someone, or he had to wait for somebody who was busy. And that's usually the case on a busy exhibition floor. So other than that, this was human interaction. There was also digital interactions where I walk up to a screen because of my NFC or the embedded RFID, the display is communicating with me. I see things transform in real time to my preferred language. I see information on screen relevant to my area of interest directly. So I don't have to scrub through and browse through. And then the information can be collected just by tapping my phone, not having to open my even my camera and scan. And that's what today's humans want. They want minimal amount of steps taken to get the information they require. And that's what today's technology is allowing us to do that. So just tap your phone, collect information, make sure you walk around the stand, but then as I walk around, everything is talking to me at a very personal level. And this is only going to get even better with the new technology integrations that are happening with some of the big brands like Meta and Oakley's and Ray-Ban, which are transforming the game of the way mobile devices are going to contribute to user experiences.
Right. So this nicely covers both the attendee and the exhibitor, and I think yep. I can sort yep. of imagine what the experience is going to be for people. So let's talk a bit about the investment. How expensive are these technologies for exhibitors who are possibly going to consider using some of these?
So it is expensive if you look at it as a single deployment. And this is something I advise all exhibitors and event organizers now, that today's investment in technology is not a one-time investment in hardware like it was before. I buy an LED screen and then I've stocked it and I keep renting it, and then it gives me a break even in you know 5 to 10 rentals, and then I'm making profit. Today's technology is based in the cloud. It's software driven, it's data driven. So the age of agentic AI is already surfacing. And if you don't ride the wave right now, it may be too late, because then you'll be paying a hefty price for subscriptions to someone else. Mm-hmm. So while we can, I would say the investment of infrastructure that would allow exhibitors and organizers and event agencies and anybody in this business would be to start building on a data stack processing solution on the back end, which allows you to train, you know, an AI agent to do a lot of these tasks repeatedly and just get better event after event, right? Because if you have your own data stack, you have total control of this open code, which does not restrict you to add new modules. Today we're restricted by, let's say, I would take a software, a CRM software, and I'm restricted to that software's capabilities based on the modules available that whoever designed it, right? I can't say, okay, now I need something more that's not here and I'm just going to get it. Why? Because it's designed by someone who for whom you're paying a subscription to create it. Now imagine if you were the creator of the software, what would you do each time you wanted something? You'd say, okay, let me write the code and plug in this new thing that I forgot to do earlier, right? So imagine building and having an agentic approach where you build your own code and you have your own database, which is powered by edge computing, which is all local, which means your customer is always assured of the fact that their data is not floating somewhere in the open servers in the cloud, which is accessible by third parties or many times stored in other countries. It's all locally being processed, which means I'm constantly training in real time based on each event. And this way, I'm paying once for building this infrastructure, but then I'm going to constantly keep layering on top. It's like having my own backend to process in real time to give results and better results event after event or year after year. And I think that's the direction where people have to go. Stop looking at it as a single investment and looking at a one-stop shop that does everything. I think build your own stack, get the right agencies involved to manage the code for you if you don't have software developers in-house. But again, to deeper dive into that aspect, coding is not as complicated as before. And as an example, even within our own organization, we've built our own software for project management because we were not happy with any of the project management tools we were using in the past years. So 3 years ago, not 3 years ago, it was 5 years ago during pandemic when my software team was sitting idle and we lost all you know, contracts, and everything was like standstill. We did not, you know, lay off anybody. We said, okay, let's get on to all our dream projects that were in the back burner. So we developed in that year our own project management tool. And year after year, we would keep adding new things. And then last year was the big agenda that let's do version 2.0, which would be this power engine that we can then roll out into the entertainment industry and let people use it from the entertainment industry on a subscription model. And then my team came back and said it's going to be whatever, 1,000+ man hours of coding and all of this. That's going to take us a hell lot of time. And either we need to have more stuff or we need to drop other projects to meet your deadline of 6 months, which was supposed to be finished by end of this year. So I put a pin on it and I said, of course, our ongoing projects are more important than doing our own pet project in-house. We'll do this at a later stage. And I put a pin on it. As of last month, I was then informed by my software division and the product owner saying, we have now figured out an AI agent that will build all the code that you desired. For putting this together in a matter of few weeks, I think we'll be done. You know? So 6 months and few weeks is a dramatic change. The same thing goes with our webpage. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with our branches, of course, headquartered in Dubai, but we've got branches in Saudi and Bahrain and other GCC states where I always wanted to make sure that we had an Arabic website. And the process of obviously content review and then doing the translation and then making sure that it's regionally aligned, making sure that it's classic Arabic and not, you know, identified as UAE or Saudi. Was the challenge. And now again, we're using AI to very quickly get these things done within a matter of days. So I think it's a big game changer on the back end in many ways, that, you know, people should start investing in long-term goals rather than look at it as an investment per event.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break,
it's the adaptation of the process that, you know, has to be inculcated by people. And this technology there that can radically change the way this happens. Like I'm right now, I'll just pull it out of my pocket. I'm carrying this device with me. Even if I forget to hit record, it's constantly recording conversations that I make on the phone. I could have this with me at an event, which is linked either to AirPods or it could be just there visible on my jacket. And obviously, as a courtesy, I need to tell people, okay, I'm going to record this conversation so that when I get back to you, we can continue this conversation.
You are listening to a Bizcast Audio Original. Podcasting is one of the fastest growing content marketing avenues today. We can help you exploit this largely untapped marketing opportunity. We can craft your audio strategy and leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that smartphone penetration provides. It is powerful and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to target audiences. Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for the Trade Show podcast and founder of PitchLink, the visitor engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode.
End of the day, Sujay, if attendees are coming to a trade show, there are potentially two motivations. One is the content, which is being lined up by the organizer. Other is to actually find information or vendors about something they want to purchase, either now or going forward. Now, that process admittedly is broken. I mean, like you said, in a typical scenario, a sales team gathers data, which is essentially scraps, which they have put together. And by the time they've decoded and they've reached out again, it's nearly 14 days before they've done it. And that's a standard number. When I talk to experts, between 7 and 14 days is the typical number you hear from most people. The problem alongside that delay is that very little of the conversations are retained.
Yeah.
Right. So if there is a 10-minute conversation and he has made some notes, whether voice note or whatever, vital pieces will be missed because he may not have taken the voice note immediately. He might have, or she might have done it after four conversations. So now she's trying to put notes for each of the four and so on and so forth. And the from the attendee's point of view, they go back. And I've actually last year I ran a personal survey. I spoke to about 200 attendees across 6-7 events across North America. And typically, I can't say even one person said that the conversation, the follow-up conversation started where the booth conversation ended. For most, I would say 99.99, I mean, I'm just out on my limb on that one, say that it literally starts from scratch. So all that I told and all that he heard and all that he told is gone. Now he knows that I've shown interest and or the she knows I've shown interest.
Yeah.
And now they're starting from scratch. Right?
True.
What is your take on this? Do you think this is what I'm saying is also what you are seeing, or is it something different that you are seeing?
Yeah, I mean that has been the market trend for quite some time now. And digital processes have slightly helped improve. It's the adaptation of the process that, you know, has to be inculcated by people. And this technology there that can radically change the way this happens. Like I'm right now, I'll just pull it out of my pocket. I'm carrying this device with me.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I forget to hit record, it's constantly recording conversations that I make on the phone. I could have this with me at an event, which is linked either to AirPods, or it could be just there visible on my jacket. And obviously, as a courtesy, I need to tell people, okay, I'm going to record this conversation so that when I get back to you, we can continue this conversation. And this is just like what ChatGPT would do. It would record the entire conversation, sum it up into a concise 400-word maximum summary, and give me records of the interest, the topic, what's the follow-up, what was my commitment, and then put it down into a task board for me. My agentic backend would take care of, you know, listing out top priority commitments to secondary commitments. And all of this is done just by training the agent on what is my desired outcome from a meeting or from an exhibition. And these kind of devices don't necessarily have to be carried around. It's going to be a matter of time before it's available within the phone itself. You already have ChatGPT that has introduced record a meeting within a physical meeting, but not joining onto a web call like this. You could still shoot record on your desktop. It's not yet come down to the mobile phones because they need to have the engine capable of obviously recording and processing in real time, but that's going to come there. And edge computing is going to change that game for everyone. And it's I think it's just a matter of time. Not just because I'm a futurist, but I strongly believe that mobile phones will not be mobile phones anymore. It's just going to be a mini computer that we carry with us in our pocket and we don't ever remove it from our pocket. It'll just be our edge computing device, which has our personal information that doesn't want to be sitting on a cloud, like your payment information or your, you know, cryptocurrency or whatever it may be. It's all going to be in this little device that you never take off your out of your pocket. And you would communicate through calls directly through, you know, wearables like a pair of glasses. You would use your glasses to capture. You would use your glasses with extended reality for navigation, for guidance, for language translation. You would obviously use these technologies then to summarize on conversations and commitments you make to people in meetings or exhibitions, and then take further steps, which again does not require you, because you would model the response conversation with a logic. Because what, the more and more you train your agent is going to be your AI assistant who knows you very well and who'll speak your language and will speak, you know, your tone, and make sure that the relevant information is sent to the person minutes after a conversation.
Right.
And that's what's going to be a normal trend, because people would expect that. You'll be like, there's AI today. What are you waiting for 7 days to put together a response to me? Today, people will be like, wow, you've responded quickly. But it's a matter of time before everybody understands that. It's like today, if you send out an email with spelling errors and a lot of grammatical errors, it'll be like, from which world are you, that which platform are you using that doesn't allow you to fix your email in the most appropriate way to get your point across, right?
Right.
Earlier, you would say, okay, the person has just sent it in error. Today, those errors are unacceptable.
True, absolutely. So with all these wonderful things happening, what are the challenges that you see going forward?
Challenges are always going to be, you know, related to dependency on technology, right? The biggest mm-hmm. challenge I see is what's going to be the mindset and the capabilities of the next generation. It makes mm-hmm. me get worried when I see the current generation that's now coming in as interns into our organization, and their expectation and their people skills and their mindset is so different from, forget about the 80s and 90s. It's a radical change.
Mm.
And I think that's the big fear, because those who are now being born in the native world of AI, they are born into AI, right? So these kids have not seen the analog world. These kids have not even seen a world where a keyboard pops up and they have to type, because everything is vocal now. Like, hey Google and a hey Siri and whatever, you know, it's like it's natively embedded into their system at a very young age. So that's the worry. Where is the human race going to go with that level of digital dependency that would then, you know, cripple the evolution of new technologies that would help. Of course, everyone would say, but then AI is going to do it anyway. But we don't know. It's going to be, it's a dystopian future that is going to be, scary, I feel, with everything that's coming up. I love to envision that future in a very positive way, and how robotics and neuroscience and, things are going to help in the way medical science is going to evolve using AI, and how safety for people with autonomous driving and everything else, reducing accidents, reducing, death by unnatural causes, which can be avoided with the help of AI. Those are the good things. But I think the challenges we're going to face is with, on a broader scale, is new generations' willingness to learn and dependency on digital platforms.
Interesting. How much of AI is hype at this point?
I think autonomous driving is one area which I feel is a hype. It's been going on for a decade now, and if you deeply understand what are the parameters and the dependencies on making autonomous level 5 happen, where people sit down and there's no steering wheel and the car just takes you, is dependent on a lot of conditions. I think that hype today is a bit too much, because everybody keeps talking about it, and of course the biggest brands in the world are talking about it. And you see all these motor shows and you see these future cars, and you ask them, they say, yeah, in 5 years. It's like, in 5 years we're going to have cars with no steering wheels. There's a lot of infrastructure change that has to happen, and every car on the road has to be autonomous. Yeah. 100% of the cars have to be autonomous to talk to each other, because there has to be one idiot on the street who's going to not follow the rules and then go and cause a mess. So yeah. how do you override that human mindset, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's one major area. Two is the overall assumption that AI is going to take over workforces, and I think that's a very distant future. Humans will always going to be the contributors. We see a lot of videos now saying that we are not going to be the superior power anymore, right? Of course, you're going to be on the top of the food chain, but in terms of brain cognitive capabilities, there's going to be something smarter than us. And that's very alien-like experience, right? To know that there's something smarter than humans. I think that's going to take some time. Of course, the biggest challenge that humans now need to come over is their own creation, which can be used in a negative way, because AI now can be used for hacking in a very efficient manner, in a very easy way and low cost for those who know how to use the platform with evil intentions. And of course, the world is moving towards a quantum era, but quantum computing has to be made accessible and affordable to every consumer. Because once we reach a stage where hacking is now easily accessible using the power of AI, your 16-bit encryption, right? Everybody talks about encryption. This is a common known word for the average consumer. And then some know that they say 16-bit or 32-bit encryption. What is this encryption? Why do we consider this as safe? Because an average 16-bit encryption would take a normal software or an algorithm to decode that tens of years, probably 100 years. And that's why it's considered a safe encryption. That's the safest way to code something. Today, using quantum computing, you could crack that encryption in seconds. So with the power of AI, with access to quantum computing, I could crack codes in seconds, which means I could enter your bank account, I could enter your credit card. All of this information is now not secure anymore. So there's going to be this major shift and this technology backfire where a lot of people are going to be hurt and affected financially and personally because of this cross-section where the evil use of technology is going to be available to those who want to capitalize on the weakness of people who have not taken that step of securing two-level authentication and multi-level protection on their passwords. And that's an awareness which I keep trying to drive onto people. Like, don't wait for that day to come. Jump onto, your checklist of all areas that you feel password was the password that needs to be changed, and you've been postponing it for the last 5 years. Please change those passwords. Make them, more difficult to crack. Use two-level authentication. Don't just, because one password concept is not going to work anymore. There has to be multi-level protection. And with quantum computing, that is going to change. Of course, major industries, we were involved with a cyber event 2 weeks ago where major technology breakthroughs have been talked about, where QRNG, basically quantum random key generators and key distribution technologies, are being designed, which are being done through satellites, where you're constantly being pinged a new code or a new key within seconds or minutes, which means you're constantly being protected. But how many people can afford that? Which technologies are going to provide that? Which platforms are going to be accessible to the average consumer, or especially to the underprivileged, the below average earner, and the sad part is those are the people that are going to be targeted, and that's very disheartening to know, right? That there's going to be this further disconnect between, the middle class and the lower middle class, because now they are being robbed because of their inefficiency or their lack of knowledge in security, in digital security. And those are the parts that I wish, governments and large-scale organizations would give access to these people and educate them before the evil comes into play. And I think that's the biggest fear of technology right now in the very near future.
Right. So to wrap up, what are you looking forward to in 2026?
In 2026, I think there's so much to, if I have to list them all, it's going to take some time. My year always starts in Vegas at CES, the world's most famous consumer electronic technology show.
Of course.
That's where I go to see all the cool stuff. And what I enjoy more is the thousands of startups that exhibit their new ideas at the convention. And those are interesting conversations because you see how each of these, you know, small teams who would have these crazy ideas that want to contribute to the current wave of AI, agentic AI, and contributing to robotics and, you know, neuroscience and gene editing and all of that. And then obviously followed by ISE, which happens in Barcelona, which is pro audio and lighting and video.
Right. And what about your own work for 2026? What's on the cards which is keeping you excited?
For me right now, of course, I can't reveal them all. You know, but yeah, we are building our own AI agent. We are working on a solution that would change the game in driving efficiency within organizations. Next year would, of course, be our pilot phase to have this solution that basically runs the office and an organization with high efficiency, obviously tapping into all data and resources of the organization. And then taking that to market in 2027, where industries, specifically us, entertainment, technology, exhibition organizers, event organizers, could use to drive higher level efficiency, because we work in an industry that has to be very agile. Everything is real time. Everything is spontaneous. Our clients want changes that should be done before they finish the brief, because the deadline never changes. Ours is one of the very few industries where a delay cannot have the standard agile process in play where everything shifts. Client is delayed by 2 days, so let's move the event by 2 days. No, that's never happening, right? The show day is the show day. Whatever hell happens before that has to be dealt with, but you still deliver on that day. And the best part of our industry, of course, is we have the power of predicting the future, right? Each of us. Where we can say, on this date, at this time, I'm going to be stress-free, because that's the time the event closes, right? So I tell everybody who says, you know, you work in this very stressful environment. I said, yeah, but your industry, you're stressed the whole year. We stress in batches. We'll say, okay, I'm stressed in March, but on 20th of March, I'm going to be stress-free at 6 p.m. You know, right. So you could predict the day that you're stress-free and then deal with the next one later.
Talk about UAE. I mean, talk about Dubai as an exhibition hub. How that is shaping up, and which areas is it impacting? And share us a little more about UAE.
I think UAE as a nation is a phenomenal example for the world to see how innovation and quick action is facilitated by you know, quick decisions. And it's that early adaptation of at a national level which is phenomenal here. It's when people are talking about AI, UAE already had a minister of AI. Right. When the world was talking about something, of course, people just see the world's largest, the world's biggest, and the entertainment glamour. But I think they are so good in investing in the right infrastructure to facilitate on the long run the need for hosting global events here. Across the region, of course, all the GCC nations are doing a lot. Saudi is in the limelight, Qatar is in the limelight. But not just because I'm based here, but this has been, you know, the motivation for me to stay here for the last 25 years and contribute my innovation to this nation. It's because it just gives back. It's the infrastructure that's available, from the telecom infrastructure to the road infrastructure to the facilities available within exhibition centers to the crowd management, and including airports and the number of flights that come in from all these nations, right? We're in the middle of, that's why it's the Middle East. It's connecting the East and the West, and it becomes the hub for the world's biggest events to be hosted, because right from your logistics to the kind of hotel infrastructure, the entertainment that could be given as part of the MICE packages, and the venue management to everything that you want to do, there is nothing that you could say is lacking in infrastructure here in the UAE. And it's only getting better. I'm right now sitting in our experience center in Expo City. And we've got the Dubai Exhibition Center, which is now going 4x on their footprint with the amount of halls that are expanding and opening. It's this future vision of our leadership in UAE and especially in Dubai, what has been envisioned by Sheikh Mohammed years ago. We're talking about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, before the Expo even opened, where the ambition was already set that, unlike all other countries, UAE would not invest and create a dead zone after a 6 month Expo. I'm today sitting in this city that's buzzing and full of life, which hosted the Expo in 2020, is now being transformed into Expo City, and the world's largest exhibition center is in the making, and the world's biggest events, including Jitex, Arab Health, have all announced moving to Dubai Expo City. So this itself shows a very visionary leadership that drives infrastructure to meet the need for being the entertainment hub of the world. And I think that's why the biggest of events are happening here. We've just finished with Formula One. We've got big sporting events as well as concerts that happen here. And one of the coolest things about this place is obviously the safety. Yeah. You could leave your hotel room at any time of the night or day and not be worried about being snatched or mugged. Yeah. So all this contributes to visitors who would say, okay, let's go to Dubai for an event. You don't have to think about anything. Is my family going to be safe? Are my kids going to be safe? Can I do a work and pleasure trip? Everything is a tick box. And I think that's what UAE has phenomenally done year after year consistently for the last 2.5 decades. And I think they're going to do that because everything that they've announced and all the infrastructure that's being built with the new public transport infrastructure, with obviously Dubai being the front runner in the region with the metro infrastructure, I think everything is in place to constantly keep this nation as the hub for the biggest international events that can happen.
PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers. Through its presentation and discussion modules, sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement process. PitchLink requires no installation or download, contains and manages the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without interruption. Connect with us on LinkedIn or visit tradeshowengage.com. That is tradeshowengage.com.
Well, so yeah, that was great note to wrap this up on. Thank you so much for your time, and I really look forward to chatting with you again sometime in 2026. Have a wonderful year ahead, and I would look forward to hearing about your adventures more.
Absolutely. You have to visit our experience center in Dubai.
We will. Absolutely.
To make it immersive and personal.
We will. Absolutely. Right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Pleasure.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes featuring great conversations on engaging your booth visitors and maximizing your ROI from your trade show investments. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us today on the Trade Show Podcast, the podcast of record for the trade show and events industry. Here we talk to movers and shakers of the $50 billion trade show industry and identify ideas, challenges, tactics, and strategies to leverage the first-party intent inherent in the trade show business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and implement some of the ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of the Trade Show Podcast. If you liked what you heard, Subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platform like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcast from, and give us a rating while you are at it. This is a Bizcast original podcast and is produced for Pitchlink, the next generation visitor engagement platform, where our mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Shubhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.